This is Shine On, the Health and Happiness Show, with new episodes every week on how to live well. Shine On is heard all over the world as a podcast, but it's heard first on the radio in New York's Hudson Valley.
Hi, it's Casey. Thank you so much for tuning in to Shine On. We've got a brand new show this week, and it's with Eliza Bozinski from the Anderson Center for Autism. We're going to talk to her in just a minute. April is when we talk to Eliza, when the flowers start to bloom. But I want to say, hey, it's been a minute. We've been running a couple of old shows over the last few weeks because, you know, I had that 3-week cold that I can't stop talking about. And Frankenberry, my producer, had to do me one better. He didn't have the 3-week cold. He went beyond that and he spent a week in the hospital. And I'm grateful we were able to text through most of that hospital stay, Frankenberry. But tell everybody how you're feeling right now.
Well, I couldn't let you get the best of me in that regard. Now, could I there, my Casey friend? But I am definitely on the mend. Thank you very much. And it was nice to get some moral support from you while I was there, while I was in the midst of my stay. But as you can tell, my voice hasn't gotten quite on page yet as to the fact that I'm feeling a little bit better. But I'm going to stop talking right now before my voice starts cracking and it sounds like I'm going through puberty or something. Like that Bobby Brady episode where they ended up having a band and they sang a song. Going through changes. Okay, that's enough from me. Back to you, Miss Casey's.
We are so very grateful to have you back on the road to good health, and we are so happy you're part of Shine On, the Health and Happiness Show. So originally when we started the Health and Happiness Show, it was all about new ideas to help you live a better life. But you know what? The world has changed, and so has our mission. Our mission now on Shine On, the Health and Happiness Show, is just to make the world a better place for everybody. What is clear to me these days is that people are realizing how strong their power is, how powerful they are in the world, and how simple kindness can absolutely change the entire universe. So that's our purpose each and every day, is to use our power and use our kindness as often as we can. We are humans. We can't be kind all the time. Sometimes we have to have a little freak out or a fit or something. But for the most part, let us pledge to use the power of our kindness. And today we're going to shine our kindness on the Anderson Center for Autism. Welcome, Eliza Bozinski.
Thank you, Casey. It's great to be here.
What's new at the Anderson Center? Tell people who have never heard of it before where it is and what it does.
I certainly will. But first, I really want to thank you for that lead-in. Actually, at the core of what we do at Anderson Center for Autism and what we want and love seeing out in the community beyond, you know, our campuses and our program areas is kindness. It truly is like the seed from which everything else grows. So I just love that you put it out there. Anderson Center for Autism has been around for over 100 years. We celebrated 100 years in 2024. So we're 102 this year. And we were founded in 1924 by Dr. Victor V. Anderson as Anderson School. And then for the last, I don't know, probably 25, 30-ish years have been transitioned into Anderson Center for Autism. You might wonder why. We changed our name to reflect really what we do, which is well beyond educating school-age students, although that is still a core of what we do. We are a residential and day program in Stattsburg, New York, for children profoundly affected by autism. But we also have Anderson Center Consulting and Training, which is a consulting department made up of experts in the field who are employees of Anderson, who provide training and education in several school districts in the area, as well as local municipalities and businesses, helping, again, kind of going back to what you said, really helping others understand that making sort of thoughtful, focused, but sometimes very small decisions can really be life-changing for an individual with autism and their family. So we have Anderson Center Consulting and Training doing that. I can get into that in a little more detail. We have Anderson Center International, which is a thriving program where scholars from around the world come to Anderson for 12 to 18 months and train here, learn all about working with individuals with autism, and then go back to their home countries where many of them are either enhancing programs already in existence or often starting programs that never existed before, serving people with autism in their home country. So we have an international reach. We also have special consultative status with the United Nations because of that ACI program, which is amazing. We have an adult program where we have a lot of former Anderson students who've graduated over the years living in various communities surrounding in Dutchess County, but also Ulster and Orange. Living their adult lives in a wonderful way. And that program has been around for quite a while. Our oldest adults are in their 50s now. Wow. And our youngest adults are in their, you know, early to mid 20s. We have Echo Autism Anderson, which is a free, I said that pretty always, online platform that we run once a month, and you can find all of this information out on our website. But it's a really cool opportunity to again spread expertise, spread knowledge without having people have to travel. And we cover different topics every month and have a hub team of experts, and we do case presentations so that more and more people can kind of learn from what we have here at Anderson and also the connections that we have to the broader professional community. I could go on, but
oh,
probably,
no, we got the idea.
I should probably just say our website.
I can't believe how much it's grown. Scholars from all over come to Anderson to learn. Yeah. That's amazing. And what do you do with the UN?
We have it's called special consultative status. It's an opportunity to, we've had people present there on like World Autism Awareness Day, which just occurred on April 2nd, but in years past. So it's a way of having a presence and a voice at the UN, not every day, obviously, but in situations and circumstances where there's opportunities for my colleagues to sometimes come and speak and share expertise with other, you know, members of the UN who might be on a certain committee and looking to bring to their, as their representatives of their countries, kind of what is available and out there and why autism awareness and autism acceptance is so important. So that's a relatively new thing, and that's really, really cool.
That is
Anderson
cool.
Center International is not as new, but that status is quite new.
Very lovely, very lovely. So the Anderson Center, the UN will take your calls. That's very nice. you mentioned a case presentation, and I kind of want one right now. Can you think for a minute, share a moment when you saw a student thrive in a way that, I don't know, might not have been possible anywhere else?
Yes, it is a story I've told, and it goes back a ways, but I have multiples, but I'll tell you this one. There was back in the day, probably when you and I first met, I was the clinical director here at Anderson. I'm currently the chief development officer, but I've had many roles here. And when I was running the clinical department, which is our department made up of applied behavior analysis, analysts who are working on behavior plans along with the rest of the team, we had a student who was about 10 and a half years old who joined the school as a residential student. 10 and a half is kind of right in the, you know, typical age, but on the younger side, I would say, for students coming in. And his family was really lovely. It was a very difficult decision for them to make, but he was a 10 and a half year old boy who really engaged in some pretty serious self-injurious behavior. He would hit his head, I can only imagine how devastating that is as a mom or dad to see your child doing that to themselves. But also really limited communication skills and was struggling at home. And so they made the difficult decision to have him come to Anderson as a residential student. Throughout his time in the school program, you know, he continued to engage in some of those behaviors, got a lot of, you know, different interventions and behavior plans. And at one point with his parents, upon his parents' request, I actually accompanied them with a couple other team members to an external program where they did some deeper dives into evaluating him and kind of what making sure sort of that everything we were trying to do was that we weren't missing anything. And we went through this day-long process that was rigorous for everybody, very difficult for the family, combination of sort of blood work and medical workups, but also asking tons of deep questions, family history, et cetera, and observation. And these two people who I will not name the location or the people that we met with, but at the end of this incredibly long day, they looked this family in the face and they said, well, he's really never going to change, nor is he going to live a quality of life. And so probably find a place with a fenced yard and just let him be out there. And this mom and dad, like, we all just sort of our jaws dropped. And we couldn't believe that after that day that that's what these quote unquote, you know, experts came up with.
Yeah.
And it was devastating and so disheartening. And so we all sort of got back in our cars and came back to campus. And of course, we continued to serve this young man. And his parents, I think to some degree, it sort of dug their heels in even more, where they were like, absolutely not. This is not what we're doing for our child. And so they kept on working with the Anderson team. And when I tell you, this young man is now in our adult program, he's in his, I think he just turned 30, if that's, wow, that might be crazy, but I think we're close to that. He goes to Disney. He goes to water parks. He goes in the van on trips back and like throughout his community. He lives independent, well, not independently, but with staff and with his roommates, housemates in an adult group home. He goes on home visits. He went to Times Square, stayed in a hotel overlooking Times Square during the holidays. He went to St. Patrick's Cathedral with his family. I mean, this young man is doing everything but walking around in circles in a yard with a fence. He is living his life. He's engaged with his family. His parents spend tons of time with him, and he has a quality of life, which is what they envisioned and what they hoped for him. And so just knowing this particular person since he was a little boy, and then going through that very sort of disappointing experience, and then seeing where he is today and still being connected to his parents, who were so lovely and so both grateful, but also like so empowered that they knew their son was in there, and have done everything that they possibly can to help him do all these amazing things in his life experience and also just live a day-to-day happy life. That's something that clearly these two people didn't think was going to happen. And you know, he's doing great. And I think Anderson, as a partner with the family, really helped make that all happen.
Yeah. There's a little bit of magic at Anderson. There's all the science and there's all the analysts and there's all, you know, the case studies. But there's a little bit of magic, because we've been talking now for many years, that everybody at Anderson seems on board to honor that person in front of them. How does that play out in the corporate world? Like, do you guys talk about that?
What do you mean in the corporate world?
Like in your administration, like,
sure.
is this a core value?
Yes, absolutely. Our mission is to optimize the quality of life for individuals with autism. We live that and breathe that every single day, no matter whether you're working in the finance department or the operations department, IT, children's program, adult program, me and my department in development and running the foundation for autism. We have the same mission. And so everything that we do, every decision, small and large, is made with the students and adults that we serve right in the middle. Right. You know, looking directly at that person saying, is this benefiting them? And then a close second, maybe even, you know, equal, is the family.
Optimize the quality of life for the individuals at the
Anderson
Have their
child
school.
With us.
Yeah.
You know, and then also the staff. I think I feel like our mission impacts me just because I get to do what I do in the name of these individuals and their families who are amazing.
Right. And being of service, that's where the magic sauce is. If you're looking for a happy life, being of service is where you find it. Tell us what a typical day looks like for a student at the Anderson Center. And I bet there is no typical day, but you'll go with it.
I'll try. So in the children's program, and remember, we have an adult program too, which is much more community-based. But in the children's program, which is here on our campus in Statsburg, New York, and we give tours every month. So you can sign up for tours on our website, which is AndersonCenterForAutism.org. Morning starts usually probably around 7 a.m. Kids are getting up in their residences if they're residential students. They're showering, they're eating breakfast, they're interacting with each other and with their staff. They're getting ready for school. This is a Monday through Friday. So they're getting ready for school. Then they're walking with their staff and with, you know, a couple of other students across campus, which is beautiful, especially this time of year, over to the school building, our Anderson Education Center. They're getting walked directly to their classroom and dropped off. And then the classrooms have about, they have six students in every classroom. Beautiful big windows, nice open space, bathrooms, the whole thing, lots of visual supports on the board, on the walls. And they have, so there's one main teacher in every classroom and then a couple of different teacher aides, depending on the needs of the classroom. Could be two, could be more if the need is greater. And they're sitting down and they're getting ready for school. So they're doing academic work. They're also doing art therapy, adaptive PE, music therapy. There are many of them are getting speech services, maybe OT and PT as well throughout their school day. They're going, maybe they have an appointment to check in with the nurse to take some medications, possibly. Not everybody does that, but we have nursing right there on site. Then they're going to lunch, a super favorite time of the day because the food here is delicious. And they're going into a very typical looking cafeteria and grabbing their tray and being independent, walking through the line. They're interacting always throughout the whole thing. There's a social component. So they're always interacting with staff, being, you know, supported and interacting with each other, seeing friends, interacting with the food service team. And then they're going back to class. School ends around 2:30. They head back again, always with staff, back to their residences, maybe for a snack, a little downtime, but not much because we find that our students do better when they're busy. And so then they're having a meeting, maybe planning the afternoon. A lot of them, then again, this time of year, they're going for walks around campus. They're coming back to the school to go play basketball in the gym or do some other after school activity. And then coming back and doing dinner and sort of evening time, some leisure. We don't have homework, but they're involved in leisure activities, playing some games, maybe individual, rest time, maybe watching a movie, whatever it might be on deck for that evening. Again, dinner and then evening hygiene and then off to bed.
When we wake up in the morning and we're taking showers and we're having breakfast, I'm picturing staff all around them, right? Because kids
yes.
need to be watched. And then, yes. and it's all day long. What are those workers called who tend to these students, self-care?
I mean, many people call them, angels and all sorts of beautiful names that really recognize what it takes to be a direct support professional, which is typically the main title that we use at Anderson and throughout the field. The people that work directly with the individuals are direct support professionals. And then there's a range of, residence managers and shift supervisors and teachers and TAs and things like that, but teacher assistants. The direct support professionals are the people who are in the houses, who are helping with hygiene, who are supervising. And I was just telling somebody that's on a tour, it's an art to figure out the level of prompting to provide to a student, because it's not all the same for every person. Basically, it's a balance of not over-prompting and not under-prompting. You always want that student to be successful in what they're trying to do independently as possible. So you have to often prompt, but if you over-prompt, they become dependent on you, which is also not what we're trying to do. So you'll see staff interacting with students, sometimes from arm's length, sometimes from across a room, sometimes they're right there next to them, depending on what's going on in that circumstance, how the person's feeling, what they're trying to do. And you'll see that throughout the whole day. Our students are not left unsupervised. They're here at Anderson for a reason. And part of it is because they need that level of supervision and support.
They're a second family. They're second parents.
Yes. They're a second parent in a lot of ways. And they're also, we've had a lot of folks describe our DSPs as my child's best friend. They provide emotional support, friendship, socialization, skill building. They're teachers. They just do it all. And we are hiring. We are a very large employer. We have great benefits packages and pay and all of that. But it's important to remember that the people who work here, it takes a very special person to recognize and to do this very hard job. And to make a career out of it. And so we're always looking for people who really have, like you said before, have this desire to work in human service and to be in this field, because interacting with human beings, especially vulnerable human beings, is one of the most rewarding, but also most challenging jobs I think one can take.
Yeah, sounds like it. We're talking to Eliza Brzezinski. We're talking about the Anderson Center for Autism. And now I want to take a few minutes for you to educate us. When we are out in the supermarket, in the shopping center, at the playground, and we encounter a family with an autistic child, please tell us how to behave.
Okay, well, be yourself first and foremost, and be kind, like you said at the top of the show. I think those are two really important things to remember. If you try to remember a set of quote unquote rules, or this is going to work because I read about it in a magazine or I heard about it on the radio, you're forgetting that you're still interacting with a person and an entire family at times, possibly an overworked caregiver, an exhausted parent, maybe a grandparent, maybe a sibling. It could be anything and anyone. And remembering the human component of what you're seeing and hearing is really important. So be genuine and think about, okay, I don't know everything that's going on in this scenario. That's a sticking point that we often get caught in. All of us get caught in it. You see something going on, you say, what is that person doing? They must be doing this. They must be, not paying attention. Often what comes to mind as an example is maybe a student who's hand flapping or what we call, self-stimulating stimming behaviors, or possibly having a really loud vocalization or even a behavioral, tantrum of some kind in a public space. Very easy to just look at the one thing and say, well, I know what's going on here. And what you typically find is that if you just wait a few minutes or a few seconds, you don't know what's going on. It could be that person is working on a skill. Maybe they're being told to wait, and maybe waiting is really hard for them. Also, intervening is a big question. Should I get involved? Should I pick somebody up off the floor? Should I call the police? Best thing to do in that scenario is to say to the person, the adult who's clearly with that individual, do you need help? Is there anything that I can do? And if they say yes, listen and try to do what they're asking you to do. If they say no, leave them alone. As long as you're not being hurt or the person you are with is not being hurt, you want to start by asking an open-ended question. Is there anybody I can call for you? Would you like me to stand by your grocery cart? Can I hold something for you so that you can help your child? Those are all wonderful things to offer, but also being able to walk away if the person says, no, this is just something I have to deal with, or they'll be fine in a few minutes. That's one of the reasons why we've created autism supportive environment trainings is to, and also all of the things that ACT or Anderson Consulting and Training does, is because there are things that can be created in stores, in restaurants, even in banks, in gyms, all over the place, even in parks, where just having a space for somebody to go sit with their child where they know that it's safe and they can kind of get through whatever the moment they're getting through can really be game changing. It can be, we have to leave this whole place as a family right now, or actually, we can sit over here for a couple of minutes, relax, and then come back to the table or come back to finish my transaction or whatever it might be. So being open to just, you don't know what you don't know. That's the key.
Yeah, 100%. We all are now in love with the Anderson Center, and we want to support you. Do you have any fundraisers coming up?
We do. And as the Chief Development Officer, I thank you for asking that question. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. And we have, I think the next big fundraiser that we have coming up is our golf outing, our Anderson Golf Classic, which is going to be held at the Links at Unionvale on June 11th. It's a wonderful day of golf at a beautiful course. And we raise quite a good amount of funds for Anderson that go directly into supporting the gap areas and the either unfunded or underfunded needs for the organization. I always say our mission to optimize the quality of life for individuals with autism is great, but it doesn't just happen by accident. You have to add things to the program and make decisions that sometimes cost money to really add in those experiences and those opportunities. So supporting our golf outing is a way to do that. Also a great way to have a great fun time and also be supporting an organization like us. The next one after that is our annual gala, which is October 24th of this year at the Grand at the Grandview in Poughkeepsie. And both of those fundraisers are excellent ways to get involved, learn more. And we have them all up on our website. Right now, we are taking sponsorships and selling tickets to golf.
Wonderful. And I want to share with people, too, you know, nobody needs, you don't need to know anyone at the Anderson School or know a child with autism or an adult with autism to support the Anderson School. You can just show up and golf or go to the gala and have a good time and know you are supporting something wonderful in the world. You don't need a close contact, right, Eliza? Everybody's going to welcome you when they see you.
Yes, we love having visitors. Our students love having tours. We do, like I said, we have a monthly sort of open tour that you can sign up for on our website, but also people can always reach out to me. You can find my contact information on our website. We give tours all the time. We're giving one today to a group of folks. And we love having visitors. We love showing up off our campus. Our campus is gorgeous, and it's kind of behind a little bit of a, you know, sort of a small sign. And many people who come on campus say, gosh, I never knew this existed. I never knew what it looked like. And many people think that they're going to come in and it's going to feel institutional or cold. And it does not. It is a joyful, wonderful place of human interaction and growth and support and love. And we'd love to show it to you.
Wonderful. Eliza, tell everybody the website.
AndersonCenterForAutism.org.
AndersonCenterForAutism.org. A joy to speak to you, as always, and keep spreading kindness. You're doing amazing.
Thank you, Casey. You too.